This is your weekly checkup with Howard Feldman and Dr. Anton Myberg, where medical innovation meets human understanding.
Good evening and welcome to the weekly checkup with me, Howard Feldman, and of course with Dr. Anton Myberg. Tonight we're talking about something that every one of us has experienced, and yet very few of us understand fully. What is that? Pain. It's one of the most body's most powerful communication tools. Pain tells us when we've touched a hot stove, when we've twisted our ankle, or when we've pushed ourselves too far. But what happens when pain doesn't go away? Why do some people live with pain for months and even years? And when should pain be taken seriously? When is it simply a part of life? We'll discuss headache pain, back pain, joints, chronic painkillers, alternative therapies, and the surprising connection between pain, stress, and mental health. Most importantly, we'll try and help you understand what your body might be trying to tell you. Send us your questions. And, of course, your comments along the way, 061-895-1019. If you've ever lived with pain, ignored pain, feared pain, or wondered whether your pain is normal, tonight is the show for you. Dr. Anton Myberg, firstly, welcome back from everywhere.
Thank you. I feel like I've got a pain in my neck after that long introduction. Thank you very much.
Wow. Okay. So somebody's a little pain. But yeah. So first of all, how was the soccer?
Soccer was
You went to Boston and...
Went to Boston, went to go watch one of the matches. Happened to be in a box with Pep Guardiola, which was a huge privilege. It was a very, very exciting
very
time.
Very impressive. Wow.
We had
a
great time. And I must say, the Scotsmen are my new biggest favorite country because these guys really know how to party and enjoy themselves.
Do you know that I can't tell you how many people we've spoken to who are there and they talk about Scotland. Scotland, yeah. I think, has won the hearts of this World
Cup. Scotland's won the World Cup without even playing a decent game.
Kilts and all. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe one day we'll answer that question about the kilts. Okay, let's kick off. What exactly is pain?
So pain is one of the most misunderstood complexes that we know. It's an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience which is generated entirely by one's brain as a protective warning system. So it's an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience which is associated with or resembles an associated actual or potential tissue damage. And the way the pain system works is that pain doesn't actually exist in your limbs or your tissues. It's actually constructed by your own nervous system. So your body detects it. You've got specialized nerve endings. They're called nociceptors. These are what we call danger receptors in your body. And they sense harmful changes in temperature, in pressure, or chemicals. And these nociceptors, these pain detectors or danger detectors, they don't transmit pain. They send an electrical warning signal up through your spinal cord to your brain. The brain then interprets that. It receives this data. It evaluates it alongside your memories, your current stress levels, your environment, and your expectations. And then the brain decides if the tissue is in danger and requires protection. It essentially creates the conscious sensation of pain to force a change in your own behavior. It's like pulling your hand away from a hot stove. And it's a multidimensional experience that your body goes through, which is shaped by multiple domains. Firstly, a biological domain,
right,
which is a physical tissue damage or inflammation or nerve damage. Psychological, which is your thoughts, your emotions, your actual emotional state, whether you're anxious or depressed or you've got past traumatic experiences. And then social things, like how your social network is influenced by the pain you perceive. And you get different types of pain. You get nociceptive pain, which is the most common cause, which is putting your hand on the hot thing where you get inflammation. You get neuropathic pain, which everyone knows about, nerve pain, which is direct damage or disease which affects the nervous system itself. And that can be a shooting, burning, or stabbing pain or sensation. And then you get a pain that becomes the nervous system's alarm system called a nociplastic pain, where there's dysfunction even though there's no clear physical damage to that area.
So it is very complex, and it certainly speaks to how humans have evolved. But we do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk to that. We're going to try and understand about the evolution towards the ability to feel pain and perhaps if all pain is a sign that is something wrong. 061-895-1019. This is your weekly checkup with me, Howard Feldman, and Dr. Anton Meiberg.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 6:12. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Meiberg. Send us your questions. We're talking about pain. 061-895-1019. Why did humans evolve the ability to feel pain?
So this was actually developed as primarily as an essential survival mechanism. It acts as an alarm system that alerts the brain to tissue damage. It motivates you to escape danger or stop using an injured body part so that body part can heal. And it allows you to learn to avoid certain risks. So it prevents further injury. In other words, you're not going to put your hand on that hot stove again. With long-term memory and avoidance, with the unpleasant nature of the pain, ensures that harmful experiences are avoided. Those are etched into your memory, so you stay away from them. And there's something called the smoke detector principle. And this is when you compare pain to a smoke detector. It's often highly sensitive, occasionally triggering a false alarm. So you actually get an alarm that goes off, like a mild soreness or ticklishness. Okay. But if you evaluate the whole thing, a minor false alarm is markedly outweighed by the ultimate cost of missing a real threat.
You spoke about memory as well. So could a false alarm, and I don't know if you want to talk about that later, but can a false alarm be a construct where somebody's feeling pain that they actually aren't feeling because of memory, experience, fear, anxiety?
Very, very definitely so.
And I pick the stuff like up like this. Hey? It's actually, I astound myself sometimes.
Your ego as well. Like post-traumatic stress disorder can cause pain, you know, and that's got a whole sort of combination of your hormones. It can be your serotonin, your dopamine, your noradrenaline, together with the actual memory, together with that smoke alarm actually stopping you from going through those memories again.
So in other words, pain... Well, is pain always a sign that something's wrong?
So I think we've got to look at pain as more of a protective alarm system or protective mechanism, which is there to keep you safe rather than to say that there's a measurement of a physical damage in your body. And it's produced by the brain as an evaluation, essentially, of a perceived threat rather than a simple detector of your tissue injury. And that's how you've got to differentiate acute pain versus chronic pain. So,
that's
very important.
What I wanted to ask you. What is that difference?
So acute pain we can view as a protective warning.
Okay.
So when you experience a sudden injury, your nociceptors, danger.
You burn yourself.
Yeah,
or you put
your hand on a hot stove, you burn yourself. So those danger receptors alert your nervous system.
Okay.
Your brain then processes that threat and it triggers pain, so you actually withdraw from the danger. You feel pain, so you pull away from the danger and it protects the area from further damage. Whereas chronic pain is more like a multifunctioning alarm. So if the pain lasts for more than 3 to 6 months, we call it chronic. Over that time, your nervous system becomes highly sensitive to a process called central sensitization. And the brain learns to keep that pain volume turned up high, and it fires warning signals even after the original physical injury. So because pain is created by the brain, the actual intensity you feel doesn't always match the severity of the physical issue. So your nervous system also is like a dynamic modulator, and it modulates that type of pain. So you have a different physical state to tissue inflammation or to emotions from high stress or anxiety or to past injuries.
So I mean, I don't want to talk about him because he's not here, but Simon broke both of his wrists, as we know. It's not something he's very proud of. But if he continues to be in pain, it is that to protect and allow healing? So therefore, is that for a while until it obviously heals and goes away? Is that still acute or is that chronic?
So you got to understand that pain with regards to acute and chronic is part of an inflammatory condition.
Okay.
You release cytokines, which are like messenger cells, which allow you to feel pain. part of the pain is the resolution and recovery process. So when the bones are healing, right, that can be a painful procedure.
Oh, in of itself it can
the
be.
The inability, the lack of movement causes pain.
Right.
The actual healing causes pain. The malunion, if there's no union between the bone fractures, that causes pain when it heals. And then almost relearning to use those muscles and those bones again is a painful experience. So that type of thing wouldn't be considered now chronic pain because it's not within 3 months yet.
Right.
So that's still an acute pain that's healing and regenerating and recovering.
Okay, so I would have thought that that is about making sure he protects those limbs while he heals.
No,
but it's actually
about comes from wearing splints or wearing that type of thing,
right,
and also him just being more sort
cautious
of understanding what his limitations are.
Right. Okay. Why do some people have a higher pain threshold than others? I can tell you, I've got no pain threshold. No pain threshold whatsoever.
I'm shocked.
A paper cut for me honestly feels like an amputation.
So,
I'm not even joking.
I get it. Sometimes that small little paper cut can be a definitive thing of you actually passing out versus a deep-seated pain. And that's, once again,
this.
That's your brain. That's your brain actually constructing an entirely different measurement of physical damage to your body. And that's due to a complex mix of genetic makeup, of nervous system wiring, of hormonal differences, and psychosocial factors. So some people have got genetic disorders, while some people have got hormonal fluctuations. I mean, some people have that central sensitization where they actually can't moderate the pain because that volume of pain goes upwards. And all these type of things, especially like things like an expectation or placebo, you're expecting pain, so it will be worse.
Also,
pain is also related
then
to the area involved.
Right.
Is there a rich blood supply with a rich neural nerve supply to that area? And funnily enough, we find people like athletes have got have got a much higher level of pain tolerance.
So that's why I don't have any pain tolerance.
Yeah, unlike a non-athlete.
Right. High-rocks people.
Mm. Yeah, high-rocks people.
Right. So it sounds like a funny question, but do women have a higher pain threshold than men given that they give birth?
So actually the studies show that they don't. So 70%
really?
Of women have a lower threshold.
They're just braver.
They're braver and they handle it better, okay? But take birth out of it. A lot of women as they age get worse symptoms from arthritis, from osteoarthritis, from the hormonal fluctuations. So a lot of women have a much higher pain level at a later stage in their life. And
that's,
I think it was maybe because of their husbands or their pain.
Yeah, they've had to deal with it.
Present company obviously excluded.
Obviously.
You know?
What is the worst pain that you've ever experienced? 061-895-1019. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Marburg. We'll be back with you just after this.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
19 minutes past the hour of 6, I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Marburg. He is in studio and we're talking about pain. Bianca says, good evening, Mr. Howard Feldman and Dr. Anton. Welcome back, Dr. Anton.
Thank you.
Please, can you speak about people with light-colored eyes, i.e. blue eyes, having a lower pain threshold?
So
I've also heard about that.
In contrast, that people with red hair are thought to have a higher pain threshold. So that's all your genetic makeup and all these type of issues
that's
that are related.
So
you've got different type of pain receptors, different type of genes that add to this. So what you're saying, Bianca, is very true.
It's Bianca.
Bianca.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about pain that should never be ignored.
So sudden, severe, unexplained pain should never be ignored. Something that goes from
sudden,
zero to hero in a few
and
seconds.
Unexplained. Yeah. In other words, if you stump your toe, it's sudden, severe.
But
you
it's
know
explained.
It's explained. Exactly.
So if you get what we've discussed many times before, that thunderclap headache,
right,
you worry about a subarachnoid hemorrhage or an aneurysm that can have burst, crushing severe chest pain, very worrying, tearing upper back pain with no injury, you worry about abdominal aortic aneurysms. Even very much more common are right-sided abdominal pain, which could be coupled with an infection or inflammation that could be an appendicitis.
Oh, I've had mine out, thank God. Because I was panicking. I was feeling, actually thinking I could actually feel something now.
Yes.
What about a back pain?
So severe back pain, stabbing back pain, especially going down to the groin, could be related to kidney stone.
Oh.
Okay. And severe tearing back pain could be related to abdominal aortic aneurysm.
Right.
Other cause of severe back pain could be a pulmonary embolism. So there are multiple causes. You know, even things like a swollen cough could be a deep vein thrombosis.
Out of 10. You know, I mean, people often say, you know, what is your pain out of 10? Yeah. What is severe?
Anything greater than 7 out of 10.
Okay.
We'd rate that as something like, and as I say, if it wakes you up from a deep sleep at night, be worried about that. That's something to be worried about because it shouldn't. If you've had pain that doesn't improve after a few days, but it's a consistent grumbling pain, have it checked out. You know, if it's causing systemic reactions together with the fever, headache, inflammation, have it checked out. Not every pain needs to be taken to the doctor or treated, but look out for the red flags. I mean, even severe back pain with nerve involvement, you know, severe going down your leg or bowel or bladder change, those are important things to look out for.
You know, what's fascinating is that we often get used to things. So pain increases slowly over
tolerance,
a period.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it gets to a point that you think, hold on a minute,
Am I ignoring it or is there a reason to ignore it? Yeah.
Which headaches are dangerous? I guess it's the same principle. Sudden, severe
thunderclap headaches.
Right.
You know, those are very, very important not to ignore because you obviously can be dealing with subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is a very important thing. And we use that. There's a terminology called the Snoop terminology. So it's systemic. In other words, is there a high fever related to it? Is it infection related? Is there a neurological fallout, dizziness, confusion, blurred vision? Is there onset being sudden, which is very important. Or you're at older age, so people like you over the age of 50, very important.
50 is fine.
And then the pattern, is it fast and furious? Does it come very quickly? Those are the headaches you've got to worry about.
And in terms of chest pain, distinguishing between heartburn and chest pain?
So sometimes that can be a very difficult thing to distinguish because if you understand the anatomy of the body, you've got a nerve that travels around your stomach. It's called the vagus nerve. So it travels up your stomach, around your stomach, goes around your heart and around your esophagus. And that's why we get that common term called heart pain. So if that's inflamed from your stomach from reflux, you get heartburn or heart pain. If it's a sharp burning pain that moves towards your throat and it's worsening when you lie down after a big meal with a sour taste and you're belching, that's more likely reflux or gastroesophageal reflux disease. But if you get what they call the classic elephant on the chest type of pain, constricting pain, severe pain that doesn't go away, which could be associated with shortness of breath, cold sweats, tingling sensation down your left arm, that's very much a distinguisher between reflux and thing. Now, also remember that diabetic patients, their chest pain is generally masked. So sometimes they can present with chest pain, which they think is actually reflux.
Right.
And actually turns out to be a cardiac event because it dulls the different receptors in the body.
Okay.
So you get a different type of thing. And so a diabetic can sit there saying, well, I haven't really had chest pain, but I'm sweating profusely and I've got this discomfort in my esophagus area. And I've taken sort of my proton pump inhibitors, which everyone's in, Nexium or Trustan or any of these ones, two or three times and it still hasn't abated.
Then
you've got to worry.
Sharon wants to know about, she says, how would osteoarthritis be considered as a chronic pain? I don't know if you want to deal with it now or...
We can deal with it later, but it definitely would be considered as part of your chronic pains. As one gets older, with the lack of mobility and that type of pain, it's definitely considered chronic pain, and as I said, more so in women.
Right. And okay, and we'll talk about that in a short while, Sharon, because what we'll do is just talk about pain management.
Yeah.
And Michael says, the worst pain I've ever had, you know, I've heard this from a few people, was shingles in my ear.
So that goes down to neuralgia.
Said it makes toothache feel like nothing.
Because you've got a different distribution in your face. You've got your trigeminal nerve, which is a three-faceted nerve that goes to the eye, that goes to the ear, and that goes to the facial mandibular part of the face. So when that nerve is inflamed, you get the severe unretractable pain that you cannot deal with. It's so severe that it makes a combination of a clapping headache, of a TMJ type of pain, of tooth pain and ear pain all together. And it even gets worse if it affects your eye. You get what we call herpes zoster oticus, which is part of this. You get a syndrome there, part of this sort of shingles thing. And you can get a dry eye, severe burning of the eye. It's a terrible, terrible pain. Hence why it's so important over the age of 50 to get your shingles vaccine.
And yeah, it's and TMJ as well. I mean, I was thinking that
TMJ
was,
is severe enough.
It's severe. It's a horrible
And that's also related
pain.
To stress and tension and that type of thing, and previous orthodontics and a whole lot of host other things. But take that and multiply that by 20.
Janine says, "Hi, Howard and Dr. Anton. Now, how would you control pain when you have cerebral atrophy down the body as well as peripheral vascular disease in the legs?"
So that's basically a combination of vascular and neurological disease. And it's a very difficult one because you've got very poor blood supply to the area, which that right. will itself
yes.
cause flow problems and it causes pain. And then at the same time, you've got a neurological, which is nociceptors, all your danger receptors that aren't working nicely. So sometimes you've got a combination drug that you use for that, which we call a serotonin noradrenaline reuptake inhibitor, which works on the emotional plus the neurological side of it, as well as the fact that you might need to either have surgical intervention
sure.
or you might need to have something to release the blood flow, where you need to have anticoagulation, as well as a whole host of other things, including physiotherapy, including stockings.
So this is a whole
different
approach. It's
yeah,
not just
it's
one
not just
thing.
One and tablet you can take. It's not pain relief is not always only related to pain medication. There's a lot of things that are related to cognitive behavioral therapy. And it doesn't mean that's in your head, that's a problem. It means you need to learn how to handle pain so it doesn't take over your life. Together with that, there's so many other handles to look after when treating chronic pain, not only pharmaceutical.
So that could be something like Cripps complex regional pain syndrome.
Yes,
that,
so complex regional pain is involving diet, it's involving lifestyle, it's involving neurological, it's involving emotional and psychological. There's so many different aspects
to that
treating
together.
That. But the cornerstone of that is CBT.
Amazing that. It's so interesting. And I'm just going to get to Jones and then we'll carry on and then we'll come back to the others. Good evening, Howard. In December, I had I hope I'm pronouncing this right, squamous cell carcinoma, which was wrongly diagnosed by a dermatologist. The doctor used cryotherapy on the lesion, damaged the nerve in my leg. Immediately after the freezing of the pain began, and my leg is now 7 months later, still goes ice cold or heats up uncontrollably. I've since had surgery and radiation for the removal of the carcinoma. The nerve pain persisted.
So remember that carcinoma's cancer is a totally different beast. Okay, and then having cryotherapy and having radiation therapy. Radiation therapy doesn't only destroy the actual bad tissue, it also destroys some of the normal tissue around that area, affects the nerve, causes nerve inflammation, causes vascular problems. So that chronic pain is really difficult to deal with, and you need to have a multi-based holistic approach to treating that, not only just a vascular surgery, but you have a neurological plus vascular plus sometimes even a pain specialist to help you with that pain.
Bianca, Joy, we'll come back to you. I just want to push on a little bit and then we'll come back to you. We've spoken about distinguishing heartburn and a heart attack. What are the biggest mistakes that people make when self-diagnosing pain?
I think misinterpreting where the pain comes from, okay?
That's so true. It's so interesting.
So sometimes pain originates in one area, but it's actually coming from another area, and we call that referred pain, as well as ignoring that pain. And then my biggest favorite is over-relying on Dr. Google, Dr. Claude, Dr. all of these things to give you a diagnosis, because those are generic algorithms.
This is not a space for judgment.
No, those are generic algorithms, and they over-personalize a lot of the symptoms, you know, and in other words, you look at Google a lot. People who also take high doses of over-the-counter medication or chronic medication mask the symptoms. So you actually sometimes don't even know what you're treating. People then confuse the correlation with causation, and then misusing of medical equipment regarding this. You know, people rely on home blood pressure like cuffs to check their blood pressures all the time, pulse oximeters. They don't even know what they're checking, but they saw it on during COVID, your saturation should be this. And then you get this referred pain. So you can get sciatica, which goes down your leg or your calf, and it's coming from a compressed nerve in the lower back, or gallstones, and you get pain in your right shoulder because that involves something called the phrenic nerve, which goes around the diaphragm. So there's so many different ways to misinterpret pain location and what the pain's coming from, and you've got to really have a holistic view of what pain's coming from.
I can think of when I had TMJ, I was convinced I had a toothache. Oh, it's my bottom tooth. Oh, no, it's my top tooth. Oh, no, it's the other side. I had no idea until I understood actually what it was. I want to know from our listeners, from you, have you ever ignored pain and later discovered it was something serious? 061-895-1019. Let's talk about what I think might be a modern epidemic. I hate saying epidemic because I think we overuse the word. But a lot of people are suffering from pain.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Look, I think a large majority of our population deal with chronic pain. And that's got to do with rising rates of metabolic health conditions, with aging global populations. Mm-hmm. As one gets older, we undergo a high prevalence of wear and tear in the body. So the joints undergo much more pain. So someone brought up earlier osteoarthritis, and you get musculoskeletal degradation, which is a very big problem. You've got your obesity epidemic, which is direct mechanical stress to your joints, and that can trigger systemic low-grade inflammation. We've got this nervous system overwiring. So when you've got prolonged exposure to pain, you get oversensitive to these types of pain. And then also we live under daily stress, anxiety, depression. These worsen pain perception. So there's a study that shows that over 20% of the global population deal with chronic pain. And that's huge because, you know, for many years, multiple practitioners, doctors, allied therapists have struggled to treat pain as holistically. They treat it as a single related thing. So you've got neck pain, you'll go for an allied treatment, but you won't actually realize where the pain is coming from or why it's there or that type of thing. So it's almost that instant coffee type of treatment. Have a quick tablet, treat it, and it'll go away. But why is it coming? What's it coming from? You know, and we've got a lot of gaps in the over-reliance of over-the-counter medication and all these things when we don't actually know what we're treating.
Is it also perhaps as a function that we are maybe living longer and leading in some ways inactive lives?
Yeah, so we call it the sedentary epidemic. You brought up the word epidemic. We sit in front of our computers. We hunched over the computer. Yeah. We've got that triple mechanism of the neck, jaw, and back pain. They call it tech, neck, and posture, you know, which is
tech neck, and posture,
which is a huge thing. Yeah. It causes muscle weakness because that lack of physical movement causes deconditioning and detoning of the muscles, and the strength goes and you get that pain. And people have got a fear of pain. So when they saw, they won't do exercise or they won't move around, and then the pain gets worse. And that's very common in people with osteoarthritis. And as people get older, they don't want to move around as
so
much.
They end up protecting, almost protecting themselves. But by protecting themselves, they're actually exacerbating the situation.
And also the fact in which we discuss very often is sleep. The lack of sleep. When you sleep, your brain rewires and reboots your system. So instead of being in a low-grade sleep REM type thing, you're still in this perpetual fight or flight reaction, and then you don't get to rewire things. So you get a lot of cortisol released, which causes a lot of inflammation in the body, and that heightens your pain receptors, and then you get disrupted and you get severe pain symptoms and severe pain signals. So that influences it, as well as diets in highly ultra-processed foods. That causes more inflammation and more sort of cortisol release.
So is that linked to obesity, or is that linked to the food itself?
Both. I mean, remember, if we look at pain, chronic pain is a complex biopsychosocial condition, essentially, which is very important. And it's something we haven't realized. The same way we only realized over the last few years that obesity is a chronic condition. Chronic pain is due to multiple chronic conditions that we don't look at properly. And obesity is a very big issue.
So so would you say that people who are obese suffer more greatly from – they feel the pain more, or they suffer more from pain?
So it's a combination, because it's a dynamic catch-22 cycle. Mm. So when you are overweight, and I'm not talking about just like 1 or 2 kilos, I'm talking when you're like 5 to 10 kilos overweight, what are you doing? You're putting strain on your joints. So you put strain on your knees.
Okay.
You put strain on your hips. And that excess weight puts your body into this biochemical sort of initiation that you release more inflammatory mediators in your body. So being heavy does cause problems with your musculoskeletal system. That causes pain. Then you release more cortisol. That causes more hormonal sort of mediated type of reactions. Then what do you do? You don't want to get up and walk around. You don't want to exercise. So what do? You become despondent. You become emotional. What is your go-to? You go to food because that becomes your comfort. Mm. So you eat more food. You put on more weight.
So that becomes
and it becomes
cycle.
A vicious double loop cycle, which is a really big problem here.
You mentioned aging. I just have it as a note. I don't know if you want to, if there's anything else you still want to talk about with regard to aging.
So interesting
and
enough,
pain.
I think with aging is as one gets older, one realizes that their bodies are going to get more frail, and they actually come to accept that pain is a natural phenomenon in their bodies. When you look at somebody who's 30 years old who's got chronic pain, they can't accept that. They can't deal with that because they've still got so much to do and so much to try and achieve that they actually don't deal with pain as much or as well as other people do.
Okay, let's send your questions, send your comments and thoughts, 061-895-1019. Joyce says, please can you ask the doctor if the shingles vaccine is now available in South Africa, and how effective are opiates in dealing with chronic back pain? We're going to come to medication, so I'm going to stop you from answering the second part, but just if you can just talk to the shingles.
So the shingle vaccine is very hard to procure at the moment.
Right.
It is available, but it's highly expensive. We're looking at like about 15,000 rand for the vaccine.
What?
Yeah, it's ludicrous. It's
something. Why? Is that because you can't get it?
It's unavailable and just because it's ridiculous. Just to go back on one point, which we were talking about with aging, is there's something called the inflammaging effect, which is as your body gets older, you move towards a state of chronic low-grade systemic inflammation. And that exacerbates your painful condition like your osteoarthritis and your things like fibromyalgia and things like that. So you do get a shift in your pain detection, but you get tissue and muscle degradation at the same time.
Before we move on to medication, I just want to ask you about if younger people are also experiencing chronic pain.
Yeah, definitely. There's a big shift in younger people. And we say that there's about...
Is that because of pedal?
No, that's when orthopedic surgeons are... loving pain, okay?
Right,
but
okay.
You know, there's about 20% of adolescents are now experiencing a different type of pain, whether it be musculoskeletal pain, from stress, from nerves, from back. The anxiety and stress that our kids go through, widespread body aches, primary headaches, the gut. When one gets stressed, you go into that fight or flight thing. So the blood diverts away from the stomach, and you get that bloating, you get that abdominal pain, pelvic pain, endometriosis for young women, you know, nervous system hypersensitive. You mentioned the one, complex regional pain syndrome, which is a nervous system hypersensitivity. Primary headaches related to schoolwork, to concentration. We're seeing a much bigger increase in pain in young people.
It is 18:39. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg. We're talking about pain. Do you live with chronic pain? How does it affect your daily life?
Do you live with a chronic pain or
spouses need not answer. Do you live with a chronic pain? 061-895-1019. When we come back, we're going to be talking about painkillers, friend or foe.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It is 18:40. I'm Howard Feldman. This is the Weekly Checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg talking about pain. Send us your questions and comments, 061-895-1019. Jackie says, hi, I suffer from severe cranial and occipital nerve pain. I have had to manage my own case and research and navigate the system myself. There does not seem to be anyone who does whole case management of chronic pain. Who are people supposed to go to help them with this?
I think there are pain specialists.
That's such an interesting question.
It's an anesthesiologist to do this because they've got far better understanding of different types of pain controls. I know a lot of patients that use different types of intravenous medications that are given them for chronic pain by the anaesthetist that actually make a really big
Would a suggestion be for somebody like Jackie?
If she's been to a neurologist or a neurosurgeon and been fully checked up and has found that there's no help for this type of thing, the next step would be to go to a pain clinic where the anesthetist can help with that type of thing.
All right. So you'd and go
multiple
through,
all over the country.
You'd go through a pain clinic.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, and the anesthetists are brilliant at this.
Are they relatively new, these pain clinics?
No, they've been around for
have
years.
They? Okay. Yeah. So I am.
And as I say, and the anesthetists are getting better and better at this type of pain relief.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about medication. What do people misunderstand about pain medication?
So I think they misunderstand how pain medication works, and they confuse the management with a cure. So people think because they take a pain tablet and it gets better, they think it's cured, but they actually don't think of what the root cause is of the pain. The other thing is they all believe that because it's over-the-counter, it means
it's
that
safe.
It's safe. A lot of the times over-the-counter is not safe, and you can get organ damage from certain over-the-counter medications. And I think also there's a tolerance that develops with pain medication. So more is not better. If you take two now and you have to take another two straight away, it doesn't mean it's better. It means that you're becoming tolerant and it's not helping. As well as the fact is that you get something called a rebound effect, that if you take too much of a medication, when it wears off, the headache comes back because you haven't dealt with the underlying issue causing the headache, and you get a rebound from that type of thing.
Okay, let's go through some of the different medications. Why do people think that paracetamol is medication? No, that's not the question.
Well, why do people think it? Probably because paracetamol is medication.
Okay, fine.
It's a very good idea.
Yes, yes. I know. Okay, so paracetamol, is it as harmless as people think it is?
No, actually not, because everyone thinks take two Panadol, then you can take another two Panadol or paracetamol, and they think there's no issue with it. The problem with paracetamol is if you take too much paracetamol, you can get organ dysfunction, liver overload, okay? And that's a very serious thing. A lot of the time when we admit people who try and commit suicide or overdose, they take a paracetamol overdose. And what that does, it converts it into a highly toxic substance called NAPQI. It's called NAPQR. You can look up what it actually is, an enzyme. And that actually can deplete glutathione in your body, and it destroys your liver enzymes and causes liver failure. And many times, people go into fulminant liver failure that by the time they come to see you, having taken so much paracetamol, you cannot reverse the liver failure, and even a liver transplant doesn't help, and they can die quickly. And the safe amount of paracetamol within a 24-hour period is about 4 grams. That's about 8 tablets within a 4-hour period, but it's not the rule. It's not every single day.
Right.
It's on a sort of bad day.
So how many can you take together?
So generally people take two together, which is about 1 gram.
So that's a gram, because it's 500 milligrams.
So if you're taking
each,
1 gram every 6 hours over a 24-hour period, that's 4 grams, okay?
Right.
But remember, people don't understand there's also something called an accidental double dosing. So you take a tablet and you think it's got this in, but then you take a different tablet because it's a different type of headache tablet, but a lot of the tablets contain dual medication. A lot of contain paracetamol plus caffeine, or paracetamol plus non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. And you've got to differentiate non-steroidals from paracetamol because they've each got their own sort of pathways and their own way of working.
Right.
And the primary danger, we said, of paracetamol is the liver or the organ toxicity, whereas with non-steroidals, it's...
What's a non-steroidal?
So like an anti-inflammatory like ibuprofen,
like a Marpridol
type of
thing. Just, you said non-steroidal.
It's called a non-steroidal. Because
which means what?
There's two different types. There's steroidals, which is cortisone. And non-steroidal is your anti-inflammatories like Marpaid, Marpridol, Nurofen,
Voltaren.
Ibuprofen, Voltaren, Diclofenac. Okay. Those are the ones. And that can cause stomach irritation. They can cause gastric ulcers. To be very much avoided in athletes who do major races and take painkillers afterwards, because what it does is it decreases the blood flow to the kidneys with the dehydration and can cause kidney failure. So all these drugs, despite being cute, they can cause trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, they can interact with many other drugs, okay? They can cause gastrointestinal ulcers. They can cause kidney disease, liver disease. They can affect unmanaged high blood pressure or advanced heart conditions. They interact with blood thinners. And if you're taking cortisone plus a non-steroid anti-inflammatory, you can really destroy your stomach lining. So that's also a problem. And people really realize that there's a lot of issues with these type of drugs.
Why are opioids so controversial?
Opioids are like a double-edged sword. So they were created to treat severe physical chronic pain, but they're highly addictive and potentially harmful. And we've seen all about the OxyContin.
I was just going to say, can you give me examples of what an opioid is in a brand
name? In the late 1990s, they came out with OxyContin, which was the miracle drug for pain relief. Now, an acute pain relief, unbelievable. But because it's so addictive, it led to people being addicted and to overprescribing of OxyContin and to these OxyContin.
Is that this other pandemic that they talk about in the United States that has devastated so many families?
So, I mean, it's now evolved to the synthetic fentanyl, which is also an opioid and also related to this type of family.
Yes.
You know, it's a big problem. And you've got a dilemma whether you've got pain versus addiction. So in an acute post-operative condition, great. Opioids are excellent. But long-term, there's addiction, there's pain, you get pain relief, but what happens is the opioids, they bind to receptors in the brain, and that blocks the pain signal. Then they trigger a flood of dopamine, and that causes intense pleasure. So that's why people love them so much. That's why they get addicted to them. And then you become addicted because you get these chemical changes in the brain, which lead to the addiction. And then the high doses either suppress your central nervous system, slowing down your breathing, and can cause respiratory failure. So they become very dangerous and, as I say, very addictive.
Right. And something you mentioned, the danger of masking pain instead of actually treating the cause. So let's move on, because I do start to get a bit nervous around this time. Can we just talk about stress and physical pain? In fact, let's talk about stress, anxiety, depression, all of these factors and pain.
So I think that everyone looks at them as only emotional and mental states, but they don't realize that it can trigger a cascade of physiological changes which amplifies your physical suffering. There's no doubt about that. It's not an imaginary pain that people are going through. It involves the same neural pathways, the same nerve pathways, the muscles, the biological systems as pain caused by a physical injury. So during acute stress, your muscles instantly tighten up in that protective fight or flight reflex. If your stress is chronic, then your muscles stay in this constant state of guardedness, and then you get resting muscle tone that actually starves the tissue of blood circulation, and that leads to soreness, to spasms, and that's localized. You get systemic inflammation. You get altered gut mobility. So stress-induced pain is very real, and we see the most obvious sites in the body are the neck, shoulders, lower back, the head and the jaw, and the chest and the stomach.
We need to take a quick break. It is 18:49. If you have any further questions, please send them in 0618951019.
Hi, my name is Paula. Join me and my friends Andy and Lisa every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Chai FM for Life and Lattes as we go three cups deep into some amazing conversations.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 18:50. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Meiberg. We're talking about pain. I want to get on in just a few moments to alternative therapies. We don't really have much time left to cover these things, but just two questions. Aurel says, questions for the doctor. How can one differentiate between nerve pain, muscular and vein pain?
So very easily, muscular pain is localized to your muscle. So if you've got neck pain and you're pushing that muscle.
So you can actually push it and feel it.
Okay. Neurological pain is not as simple, because a lot of the time it can be referred. So if you've got a sciatica, your pain's coming from your lumbar spine or your lower back, and then it can refer down your leg. It can refer to the outside of your knee. It can go all the way down. Vascular pain is very different, because that can involve caloric places. So in other words, you get a drop in the temperature of that limb, or it's colder than normal, and you've got poor blood flow to that area. So that causes a more dull type of aching type of pain, where the neurological is a stabbing like type of pain with a hypersensitivity type of pain. So you can distinguish between that.
And Joy wants to know, is 10 milligrams, you're going to have to help me with my pronunciation, of Targinect twice a day, a high dose.
Very high dose. And it's once again, it's part of this whole OxyContin family. It's a combination drug. And this is used in chronic pain with, like, we see them in failed spine surgery. So a lot of people have chronic spinal fusions, and they have recurrent ones, because as you keep on repairing, then it, like, goes upper level and upper level, and you have multiple surgeries, and it results in a failed spine. And these patients become actually addicted, through no fault of their own, to these types of medications, because it's the only thing that releases the endorphins and pain relief, but unfortunately become tolerant to it as well. So there's other types of ways they need to learn how to get them treated, and that's where you would put in a pain specialist together with your neurosurgeon or neurologist. Right.
Joy, doesn't sound easy. Let's talk about alternative therapies. Well, I'm not sure if some of these are alternative or mainstream, but you'll tell me. Physiotherapy, chiropractic care, acupuncture, massage, TENS machines, exercise and movement, sleep, all of these things.
So a lot of these things are highly misunderstood.
Okay.
Acupuncture. It stimulates points on your body. They take thin needles, and that triggers the release of endorphins, which are your natural painkillers, and alters brain chemistry. So that's very, very good for chronic lower back pain, neck pain, osteoarthritis. There's something called mindful-based stress reduction and meditation. That helps you separate the physical pain, the physical sensation of pain, from the emotional and psychological response of pain. Tai Chi and yoga are brilliant. They combine slow, low-impact movement, deep breathing, and they focus your mental attention onto stretching the muscles, improving joint stability, and reducing systemic stress. Where massage therapy is also good, but that's more for immediate temporary relief and stress reduction. So, like, you've got to look at different types of alternative treatments, as we're going to call them. Looking at something called a TENS machine, which is transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulator, there is scientific evidence to say it definitely does support ability to relieve pain. It works on acute and chronic pain because it blocks pain signals and triggers the release of natural painkillers. Your dosage of your TENS machine definitely matters. You should push it up to a sensory intensity where you actually notice a tingling sensation from the nerves when you're using it. And there are mixed studies out to show, does it work, does not work. But it's generally a very favorable thing. Now, with regards to exercise, I mean, exercise is one of my big favorites because that creates a
movement,
but also creates a natural high because you get a release of endorphins, of endocannabinoids, of serotonin, of adrenaline, of dopamine, you know, and what I've said is you get this fear avoidance situation where somebody is in so much pain, they're scared by moving around, it'll exacerbate the pain. So they become sedentary, then their body becomes physically deconditioned, their muscle tone goes down, their muscles atrophy, and they actually make the pain worse. So it's a very, like, sort of cross between actually movement and not movement. Movement is so important. I would say that physical movement is probably your central pillar of non-drug related rehabilitation.
Incredible. Wow. Okay, I've got, before we close, five very, very quick rapid-fire questions. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
The one thing everybody should know about pain.
It's an output of your brain, not a direct measurement of tissue damage.
Most,
very important.
Most overrated treatment.
Opioid painkillers for non-cancer pain.
Most underrated treatment. Yeah, say it together.
I would exercise, and cognitive behavioral therapy.
Interesting.
Very
I
much
didn't
so.
See that one coming. Yeah. One symptom that people ignore too often.
Sudden crushing chest pain.
Yeah, you heard that. Just don't ignore it. One practical thing listeners can do tomorrow to reduce their risk of chronic pain. Say it with me. Yes,
yeah,
what?
You're wrong. Practice slow, deep, diaphragmatic breathing.
Really?
To help with your conditioning of your body and the
and
pain.
And you can do it sitting.
It deconditions your body and takes away that effort and that sort of focus on the pain.
Incredible.
And then the exercise.
That's where we leave it. Dr. Anton Meiberg, thank you as always. Craig, thank you for keeping us honest here and for staying in late to control. It is soon to go at 7 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. This has been your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Meiberg.